Welcome to the Story Story Night podcast, where you hear true stories on a theme, recorded live on stage and without notes. I'm your host, Jessica Holmes. This week, we get immersed in water. Stories of going with or against the flow. Our Swell, July 2011 show. First, Carly Oppie thrashes against the flow as a teenaged, then full-blown bulimic.
My story begins as a seven-year-old girl on the edge of the pool at the Havre, Montana Lions swim team meet. And so my dad's in the stands holding his video camera, the ever-present camcorder that was like this big. Remember, they were like huge. You could like put a videotape in them. Yeah, that was ours. And so I'm getting ready to, to gracefully dive in for my turn in relay. And I know, they're like, okay, my coach is like, okay, go, Carly. So I proceed to gracefully dive in my mind. And then I proceed to swim as fast as I can in my mind. And I'm just going and going, and I'm going to make my parents so proud, and I'm going to win, and maybe I'll make friends who are a little bit cooler than me because I'm kind of a nerdy kid, and I already know that. I'm only seven. Oh, my goodness. Oh, I'm so excited. In reality, yeah, okay, the dive looked more like a drunken Spider-Man, nervous skydiver, like, leap thing. And I was, like, flailing around, and I could possibly have been mistaken for a drowning victim. I'm not kidding you. I was like, I probably moved about 3 feet in about 45 seconds, I think. And little did I know, I was in the process of creating one of the most epic Booth Family Home videos of all time. Yeah. The egg beater. you can hear my dad holding the camera, and you can hear him go, oh, Pam, look at, oh my gosh, you're not going there. Oh, Jesus Christ, oh my God. And the worst part is that my dad's not the only one laughing on the tape, okay? Those stands were full with all these parents. Oh, yeah, I'm Carly. I was the middle child, the soft-hearted one, the family clown, the class clown, the goofball. But I've come to realize that video really symbolizes a struggle that I've dealt with since I was 15. I'm a 31-year-old recovering bulimic. So if you guys are doing the math, that means for 16 years, I've gotten really good at the barfing. It's okay to laugh. It's okay. It's fine. It's okay. A lot of people ask me how it started. Do you remember the first time you did it? Oh, I've done it. I've totally done it, but I couldn't do it. Huh? First time you did it? I can't even remember. I mean, my brain was still developing when I started. And when you are bulimic, you're dehydrated. You know, like Jessica said, your body's made up of almost all water. Well, when you're a bulimic, you're not necessarily skinny, skinny, skinny all the time, but you fluctuate a lot. And sometimes when I know a pair of jeans fit me that shouldn't, I'm like, yeah, I'm dehydrated. Which isn't funny, but kind of is. But the first time I remember associating me with being fat, which I never was, but in eighth grade, I was the first one to get boobs and hips, I swear, of anyone, which is probably not true. But I remember my older brother, who's now 37 on Saturday. I remember as him in high school or college, he's like, God, I hate weighing like 145. I look like a beanpole. I'm never going to meet a girl. And I remember going, I weigh 150 and I'm in eighth grade. Well, that means I'm fat. You know, I wasn't. I was like in eighth grade. My dad was not happy about it. Trust me. I was like an hourglass, but right away, I started dieting. You know, I cut out red meat. I cut out Snickers bar. I cut out regular Coke. And I walked everywhere. I walked to theater practice because, yeah, side note, I'm an actor. Yeah, went to school for it. I get paid for it every once in a while, but, you know, that's not very important. And like that, you know, at 15, 14 or 15, it all just falls right off you. And I was 135, completely healthy. But then I got into theater in high school. I was in every single production until I graduated, freshman to senior year. And I was obsessed with looking a certain way and being a certain somebody. I always thought I wasn't good enough. I always thought I wasn't popular enough. I always thought, you know, my sister was a cheerleader. My brother played tennis. And I was like, I'm in band. Which is now really awesome. Because people are like, ooh, what you play? I'm like, the French horn. Pretty awesome. A lot of people ask me also when I hit rock bottom. And, you know, I get that a lot. And it wasn't when I fainted in a Quiznos in Missoula, which happened. It wasn't when I was put into treatment at 19 at 117 pounds. And I'm about 140 now. And it wasn't when, you know, my mom couldn't even look at me without crying, or when my father, who's a physician, you know, he couldn't do anything for me. I mean, they would lock the doors and they would of the bathroom, and I would throw up in Tupperware and put it in my closet. And they thought they were failing me, but they weren't. They were doing as much as they could. And when I went away to college, I just lost it completely. I mean, they threw me into treatment so fast the first time they saw me after I left for school. And, well, my rock bottom wasn't just then, but I was 27, and I just met a really great guy, and he was so nice. I was like, almost like, yeah, I think he might be too good to be true, but some of the only times that we had together were dinners. So he would come over from work, and I would make him dinner. I was living in a little attic apartment. And I was, you know, I'm really motivated. I was cleaning, just doing stuff and getting dinner ready. Earlier that day, I'd eaten like an entire thing of Chinese food and, you know, gotten rid of it. And, yeah, I know it's kind of gross, but the details would make it real. Yeah. And so he walks in and my former boyfriend says, hey, and he goes to use the bathroom. And he goes, why is there a bunch of Chinese food in the toilet? I know, gross. Yeah. Well, that's what happens. Bulimics are so focused. People with an eating disorder are so good at having an eating disorder and living life, for the most part, that they forget to do things like flush the toilet. I can guarantee you I've never forgotten since. But when he came out and said that and looked at me, I just crumbled. And I just was like, well, I guess I'll see you later. And, you know, I call him my former boyfriend because he's now my husband. Yeah. And he said to me, you need to get help because I want you to have my children one day. And I'll never forget that. I was like, whoa. Okay, either I've brainwashed him or like I'm on hidden camera or something. But, no, he's been my biggest cheerleader. And he's helped me believe in myself and you know, one thing that really stands out in my mind when I was in treatment was I was 19 years old and my parents came out to visit me in Minneapolis where I was being treated at the Fairview University Medical Center, and I got like a free pass to go out to eat and try and practice being a human. You know, like, I would like a latte and a bagel. You know, it's like, yeah, I'm going to eat something real with cream cheese. And I remember my parents and I sat down at a table and this guy walks up to me, the very normal-looking guy with a business card, and he hands it to me. He's like, you know, you could be a model. And I felt so triumphant. I was like, yes! I told you, Mom. I told you, Dad. You have to be skinny if you want anything in this life, in this world. You've got to be skinny. See? I'll never forget how devastated my father looked at that very moment. I mean, I literally saw him hang his head and just shake it. And my mom was like, thanks. Yeah, okay, bye. nothing was really said about it at that point. But, you know, it made me realize that, yes, it was my choice to get this disease. But it wasn't really my choice to feel that I needed to be a certain way in order to be a successful actor or be a beautiful woman or have sex or look attractive to anyone and anything. But, you know, one thing that I've really realized most recently as I still seek help and still talk to people and write about it is that I don't have to be perfect, and that's okay. I can stand up here and tell you that I'm not perfect. I'm not. And I don't have perfect days, but I can stand up here and say that I'm a beautiful person and I deserve happiness. And thank you. Thank you. And all I ask is that the next time you're out with a friend who's really drunk and he might be a little bit of a redneck, or she, and they see a girl that might not be like walking down the street, and maybe something that you shouldn't be wearing, but you know, we're not all perfect, okay? But don't yell out the window at her, or don't talk about how fat she is. Don't, because who the hell cares? You care. It's your fault that you think that person is a certain way. It's just your fault. It's not mine. It's not theirs. Yes, live a healthy lifestyle. Be good to yourself. But don't walk around and judge people to the point where you become the problem. But also, that was just my soapbox. Okay, I'm down. I'm down now. Thanks. Thanks for listening. But also, another thing that I remember, a couple more things before I wind up. When I came into treatment at 19, the overseeing physician was like, he saw right through me. I mean, he knew I was there for a good reason and that I was very ill. But he's like, you know, Carly, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And I'll never forget that because I didn't drink. I was like hauled to the water 98 times until Troy and I had that moment in my living room, and he just put it right in front of my face, and he was like, quit it. I'm like, it's not that easy. But, you know, it's there's so much shame associated with these things. And I've come to realize that that shame is just, it's just fear. That's all it is. And it's okay to be a little bit afraid of living your life because it's scary, you know? This economy is something else, you know? It's a crazy world out there, but I think what a lot of people take for granted is sitting down to a meal and eating and being okay. Like, I still struggle, and not all the time, but it's always right there, a little voice telling me, don't eat that or eat all that or don't do this or don't do that. And my mom used to say, God, it was so easy when you were a baby because I would just put you right here and you would just eat. And it was like, Mom, why do you have to say stuff like that? But it's true. Our girls in this country need our help, and they need to know that just because they're not this big doesn't mean they're beautiful in every way. And I don't mean to sound like a public service announcement, but if you know someone who needs help, please help them get it, because there's just absolutely no shame in it. And when you actually face your problem and you face your fear, you know, you realize, and I realize, that I might still be that little girl, like, flailing around and moving 3 feet in 45 seconds, but I just moved 3 feet in 45 seconds. That's a really big deal. I mean, especially for someone who was as unathletic as I was. I still am. Just trust me, if you know anyone or if you've dealt with it before, I swear to God, it feels like you've woken up from a 100-year nap when you realize that life is not about panic attacks at all-you-can-eat buffets or wishing you were dying on a cruise ship, because that's just the bulimic's worst nightmare. And once you just realize that the fact that you can't rock some short shorts and a miniskirt does not mean you're not a good person. So thank you.
Thank you, Carly. Priority seating tickets for our August 29th show, Fire, go on sale next Monday. So stay tuned to storystorynight.org to hear about our featured storytellers and more show updates. Next, story slammer Chuck Chappelle embarks on a fishing expedition that nearly suctions the life out of him.
Yeah, I thought it was a raffle too, but here I am. You know, outside of Juneau, Alaska, the water is really cold. In fact, I lived in Juneau, Alaska, and I got to experience that. It happened one day, a friend of mine who grew up in Boise, Idaho, was coming to Juneau on a business trip. And Jerry, his name was, insisted on going fishing. And I warned him about the cold water. However, he insisted that the other people that went to Juneau got to go out fishing in large boats by their friends. And I explained to Jerry, I don't have a large boat anymore, but I have a 12.5-foot sport raft, inflatable raft, that I do take out into the ocean. And Jerry said, that'd be okay. So we left Imauga Harbor one bright, sunny day to go halibut fishing. I had the equipment, I had the boat, and we were headed out to Shelter Island. And when we got here, there at Shelter Island, in the pass between the two islands, I anchored up, as we normally did, to fish for halibut, and I got out my fishing lines, which included about a 40-pound fishing line, but at the end of it was a leader that was a metal leader because halibut have sharp teeth, and they often chew through the normal fishing line. So these are prized fishing leaders. So Jerry and I anchored up, baited our lines, and threw them down into the water. And it went down and down and down. And it wasn't long before Jerry got a tug on his line. And I thought, why, that lucky son of a gun. It takes me a long time to catch a halibut. Jerry had a tug on his line, and he started reeling up and reeling up. And we were in this pontoon or inflatable raft, remember? And he kept reeling up, and eventually coming to the surface was a big, about 6-foot diameter shadow. And I thought Jerry had caught a huge halibut. And I was worried about bringing that halibut on board, for one thing. But I needn't worry, because as he got the shadow closer to the boat, it was an octopus. And it was an octopus with an 8-foot tentacle spread, diameter. And Jerry said, cut the line, cut the line. And I said, no way, I want my leader back. So I said, pull the octopus in. And Jerry reluctantly pulled the octopus in closer. And pretty soon, one tentacle was over the pontoon. And then another tentacle was over the pontoon. And octopus have that parrot beak that are kind of rough on inflatable rafts. And I said, Jerry, pull the thing closer. And the tentacles were coming over, and the beak was getting closer. And I said, hold on just a second. And I got my fillet knife out, and I saw where the hook had gone into one of the tentacles. I reached over and cut a little chunk of the tentacle out and got my leader back, but the octopus was mad by then. And the octopus, how they accelerate out and they display that ink, emit that ink, and this big column of water came out of the ocean and went arced over and landed right on Jerry. And Jerry was pissed. He said, this doesn't happen in Boise. And Jerry said, get me home. And I said, okay. Well, we headed back to shore, and Jerry, as I said, was fairly angry. But on the way back, the doll porpoises were crossing in front of us, and by the time we got to shore, Jerry was pretty happy. But I had decided that I wasn't going to fish for halibut anymore for a while on that raft. And so about a year later, I went into the garage and opened up my lure box, my fishing box, tackle box, and all of a sudden, this whiff of rotted octopus came into my face. That's my story.
Thank you for listening. Story Night is brought to you in part by presenting partner the Boise State Story Initiative, venue partner the Lennon Building, design partner Neighborhood All-Stars, and our broadcast partner, Boise State Public Radio. Please donate now at boisestatepublicradio.org. Our Story Night theme and podcast production are by Dan Costello. Hear more at hearcostello.com. And please join us next week for another wave of water stories. Learn more at storystorynight.org.